And then because one of our presenters is not here, isn't anticipated to be here, we're going to flip-flop a couple of items after Habitat. Looks like we're going to take the ACL and AM discussion after Habitat, and we'll see where we are after that. Okay. Neil Diamond Simpson, when you're ready.
I need to warm up.
Where's the shades this morning?
Yeah. I need them more tonight than this morning than I needed yesterday. Okay, behind tab four is your scallop documents. The first document is the milestone sheet. Shows you where we are in the process through Amendment 15, which is scheduled to be in place by the 2011 fishing year. Document number two is the Amendment 15 scoping document. Document number three is the comment summary that Sarah is going to summarize for us. Document number four are the scoping comments that we've received, during the comment period. There are 24 letters in all. Number five is a letter to the executive director from the regional administrator regarding the biological opinion. Can you hear me okay? Okay. How's that? Okay. I try to back away from the microphone when I... Okay. All right. I'll never live it down. Okay, where was I? Oh, yeah, Ramblin' Rosie. Reasonable and prudent measures discussion of the biological opinion on turtles, which requires NIMS to limit by the 2010 fishing year the number of open area scallop days at sea that can be used and the number of access area trips that can be taken each year in the mid-Atlantic. That's either a 50% reduction during the June through October period relative to the 2004-2007 fishing years, or a 70% reduction from May through November. So that's an important letter. Number six is a letter from General Category Fisherman Bob Maxwell to the regional administrator requesting a possible change in trip limits from in the general category from 400 to 600 pounds, and Pat Kirkle's response, referring his request to the council, pointing out the two actions where that a possible change could take place, and that would be in either Framework 21, which will be done for the 2010 fishing year specs, or in Amendment 15, which is due for implementation in 2011. So we might want to talk about that a little bit later on. And document number seven is the Amendment 15 scoping summary presentation, which Sarah is going to take us through now. And then we'll come back to the scallop survey advisory panel summary that Andy Applegate is going to take us through. He's here somewhere, I trust. And there he is. Okay. And Deirdre's here as well to back us all up as usual. So, Sarah.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm going to go give you guys a brief summary of the scoping comments that were received for Amendment 15. This presentation follows the Amendment 15 scallop scoping quick reference document, which is the third document in the meeting materials. So please refer to that document to follow this presentation, or document number seven, which is the presentation. For scoping, the final scoping document was approved at the February council meeting. We held four scoping hearings in early April. About 8 to 11 people attended in Newport News in Portland, and 20 to 30 people in Cape May and Fairhaven. The scoping period ended April 4th. the purpose of Amendment 15, we had 7 purposes. The first one was to set ACLs and AMs, describe rationalization measures for the limited access fishery, revise the current overfishing definition, establish modifications to 4 specific measures approved under Amendment 11 for the General Category Limited Entry Program, develop measures to address EFH closed areas and the scallop FMP if Phase 2 of the EFH omnibus amendment is delayed, establish alternatives to improve the current research set-aside program, and lastly, to consider changing the scallop fishing year to May 1. Most people are in support of including the issues that have been identified so far. So the timeline from May to October of this year, we will be developing alternatives for Amendment 15. November 2008, the Council will approve alternatives to be analyzed in the draft supplementary environmental impact statement. From December of 2008 to May of 2009, we will complete the analysis for the DSEIS. June of 2009, the Council will approve DSEIS for public hearings. And then we will take a break from July to September of 2009 to develop Framework 21 specifications for 2010. December of 2009, we will hold Amendment 15 public hearings. April 2010, the Council will select final alternatives for Amendment 15, and in March 2011, NIMS will implement Amendment 15. The first issue is ACLs and AMs. It was not a major major issue that we heard a lot about, primarily because, like us, fishermen are waiting to receive official NIMS guidance. The first comment was that ACLs and AMs should be developed in such a way that, for example, if the limited access general category fishery goes over its ACL, it doesn't affect the limited access scallop fishery. Suggestions were made about the level to which the ACL should be broken down. The first one was that we should break the ACLs into limited access and limited access general category fisheries. Some said break the LAGC fishery down further into the 3 respective permits within that, the LAGC, Northern Gulf of Maine, and incidental permits. And some people even argued that we ought to break it down to the individual level. People also said that ACLs and AMs should account for bycatch also, such as an ACL and an AM for the yellowtail fishery. And also people said ACLs should remain separate from the groundfish fishery. Issue number 2 is the rationalization of the limited access fishery. It was a major focus of scoping comments, specifically with regards to IFQ's permit stacking and capacity reduction. The IFQ was a hot topic, much like a volcano. We consistently heard that we should not adopt the IFQ-ITQ system. Many are in favor of permit stacking, and the most consistent comment that we received was that 2 permits should be permitted to stack onto 1 boat. About half of those in favor of permit stacking argued for no vessel upgrade restrictions, while the other half of the people wanted upgrade restrictions. And then there was the other contingent that argued against capacity reduction, saying we should forego it at this time because it will lead to mega boats, a lack of accountability in the scallop industry, and will potentially financially hurt small boat owners. Issue number 3 is the overfishing definition. It did not receive a lot of attention with the exception of the following comments. Most commenters were against revising the overfishing definition. There were 2 primary concerns. The first was the potential negative environmental impact of increased fishing mortality limits in access areas. The other is the potential negative economic impacts with reduction of the fishing mortality limit in open areas. A few people were supportive of the OFD revision because overfishing is most likely occurring in the open areas. Issue number 4 is modifications to the limited access general category fishery, which was just implemented under Amendment 11. This amendment will not revisit the major provisions that were just implemented. However, based on previous issues that were raised during Amendment 11 development, the Council has identified specific topics for the committee to develop. The primary topics that were addressed by commenters were IFQ rollover, revision of the Northern Gulf of Maine program, and an additional idea that was not in the scoping document. The first modification is IFQ rollover, which was supported by many fishermen. However, one person voiced concern about banking IFQ and so suggested only allowing a percentage of the leftover IFQ to roll over, such as a 15% rollover allowance. The second modification is IFQ by area. One comment was that IFQ by area is good for nearshore areas but may not be cost-effective for offshore areas unless approved with other measures such as sectors. Another commenter was opposed to IFQ by area. The third modification is the Northern Gulf of Maine calculation revision. It was said that landings from state waters should not count against the Northern Gulf of Maine tax so that people can still fish in state waters after the federal tax has been reached. Another comment was that general category scallops caught in the Northern Gulf of Maine should not count against IFQ tailored specifically to scallops outside the Northern Gulf of Maine. Also, people said that all scallop vessels should abide by the 200-pound daily limit in the Northern Gulf of Maine instead of allowing the limited access vessels 18,000 pounds while restricting all the others. And lastly, a survey should be performed ASAP on the Northern Gulf of Maine scallop resource for incorporation into the Northern Gulf of Maine TAC development. The fourth modification is consideration of sector applications. No one was specifically opposed to accepting applications. They were either supportive of accepting the applications or were against sectors altogether. The last issue that was raised was not in the scoping document, so the scallop committee still needs to consider whether it should be incorporated as an Amendment 15 alternative, but it said the daily general category possession limit should be raised from 400 to 600 pounds due to the escalating cost of fuel and current economic crises. This would reduce expenses and increase profits and overall economic efficiency by reducing the number of trips a vessel has to take to fill its IFQ. The fifth issue is essential fish habitat closed area consistency measures, which was addressed by almost every commenter. Most commenters were supportive of including this revision of EFH closed areas in Amendment 15, especially due to concerns about more delays in the EFH amendment development. Some commenters did not support it, as they felt it was better suited for the Habitat Omnibus Amendment. Issue number six is improvements to the research set-aside program. Only a handful of people talked about this. Most people were supportive of streamlining the process to reduce the wait time between applying for and receiving funds. Other topics including multi-year proposals and subdividing the 2% set-aside for access area surveys to aid in TAC estimation under rotational area management. One comment was that the process should be more open to stakeholder observation and comment. And lastly, it was said that funding of NIMS surveys should be separate from the RSA industry program. The commenter feels that NIMS is looking to subsidize their own budget with RSA funds. Issue number seven is changing the fishing year to May 1. Almost all commenters spoke to this issue. Most people are against changing the fishing year due to already established business plans and because the new turtle biop requires a large reduction in fishing during the summer. This would mean that the scallop season would open up May 1st and then immediately close for turtle protection, and then they would be allowed to fish again in November when the bad winter weather is setting in. And lastly, a few commenters said that changing the fishing year start date to May 1 is a good idea because it does match the ground fish plan and makes it more compatible with science needs. With regards to other issues, these issues were not related to the specific scoping topics. Most of these were brought up by one or a few individuals only. Staff is not planning on working on any of these unless directed by the council or the committee. First, a commenter requested including investigating effects of starfish predation and row on landings from closed areas, also requiring meetings to be broadcast via the Internet, and determining the effects of oceanic man-made chemicals, including acid rain and jet fuel on scallops. Next, people suggested adjusting when a vessel must declare the start of a trip, i.e., do they start it in port or can they do it at the demarcation line? Another comment was that we should implement a rule against anchoring in access areas because when the yellowtail tack is close to being reached, some vessels have a tendency to anchor in the access areas while shucking, which puts them in the path of vessels that are fishing. Amendment 15, it was suggested, should include measures to address bycatch of sea turtles as directed by the recent turtle biop. However, Framework 21 will need to include measures to address the turtle issues because Amendment 15 will not be in place until 2011, and the turtle biop requires measures to be in place by 2010. And the general category possession limit should be raised from 400 to 600 pounds. I've already said this, but I wanted to remind you that it was not part of the original scoping document. And lastly, adjustments to the observer set-aside program were suggested. The last bullet was not received as an official scoping comment. However, the council has received a letter on this topic, and it's come up in recent meetings. Specifically, the adjustment suggestion is in regards to how vessels are compensated for open area trips. A letter in the April council binder from one of the observer service providers highlighted problems with our current program. And that's it. Unless there are specific motions made today in terms of removing or adding measures, the scallop committee will further develop these issues into alternatives this summer. Can I field any questions or comments?
I just want to say I think that was an excellent way to present the summary of the public comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone on the council? Dave.
Okay, yeah, and just to remind everyone that this really is just at the informational point. The various committees will be meeting this summer, you know, to work out, flesh out details of all these issues. And the last couple of bullets on the other issues, in particular, the discussion of the 400 to 600 pounds with the change in fuel prices, I think that's something that has general category folks interested in revisiting that. And finally, the adjustment to the observer set aside program. It's pretty evident that it's becoming difficult to get those trips because of the compensation rate. So that's probably something the oversight committee will be talking about. I'm not talking loud enough, am I, Jim? Sorry. All right, so we can move right ahead then to the SCOLLOP Survey Advisory Panel summary that Andy's going to provide for us.
Thank you. The SCOLLOP Survey Advisory Panel met on May 21st in Taunton, Massachusetts, and there were several presentations given by various panel members. Dr. Hart gave an overview of survey technology, dredge surveys, and did a comparison of those. There's a summary of the minutes. It's document one towards the end of tab four. There's a separate status sheet. Comparing she compared the area surveyed and the cost of surveying a set area with the various surveys, outlined some of the advantages and disadvantages. She covered the towed video survey as well as the dredge survey. And then she discussed survey dredge calibration with the research vessel SHARP is going to deploy the new survey dredge. The calibration will include 50 stations in closed areas that were sampled in 2007 and will again be sampled by the SHARP in 2008. Plus 84 stations in Delmarva area, closed area 1, closed area 2. There'll be some commercial dredge shadow surveys conducted with VIMS and others, where the commercial vessel tows essentially the same place and the same time as the SHARP, using commercial gear as well as the original survey dredge. Then there will be some portions of the northern part of the survey where the TABCAM video survey is done over the same areas that the SHARP tows. So we discussed some of the issues regarding the calibration exercise. There was discussion of how that would be done and possibly peer-reviewed. Then Vic Nordahl gave a presentation of the transition plan and some gear issues. One of the issues was whether to use turtle chains in the Mid-Atlantic in the dredge survey, and Ron Smolowitz presented some data which indicated that the turtle chains did affect the scallop catches, so that was an added source of variability. And so the SSAP, after discussion, decided that it was best not to deploy turtle rock chains, but only overall, but only in strata that were deemed to have problems due to large boulder habitat. Primarily, there's two strata off of Cape Cod that applies to. And that they should not be used on soft and sand bottoms or anywhere in the Mid-Atlantic region. So that advice was passed along and to the Fishery Service, and that enters their plans for the summer sampling. Dr. Stokesbury gave a overview of the SMAS program and plans for the summertime that they anticipate sampling the resource. And he felt that the SMAS system was a tried-and-true system that didn't have some of the issues associated with dredge calibration. He advocated using the SMAS survey to conduct the surveys instead of the new dredge until a whole new survey program was developed by the SSAP. There was some discussion about timing, and one person's outlook was that the new survey technology with video and AUVs or something could be developed by 2010, but the new survey dredge would be conducted and calibrated in 08, 09, and 010, and 10 would be the transition year. Richard Taylor gave a synopsis of the HADCAM technology development. It gives a lot of information. There are some details to be worked out. The identification program is identifying about 80% of scallops that can be identified by hand count, and so there are ways to adjust for that. And they're getting pretty good information about sizes of scallops in the survey. That kind of technology can cover a lot of bottom in a transect, and is very cost effective. Kevin Kelly gave an overview of the main survey conducted in inshore waters, and there were some plans using RSA funds to extend that survey out into some portions of the federal waters. There had been some discussion about some coordination using the drop cam survey with SMAS. And so that's in their plans for 2008. I gave an overview of the survey coverage relative to scallop fishing areas. There are some areas that are not well surveyed by the NIMP survey where fishing effort occurs. There's some coverage from some other surveys, but even that is somewhat incomplete. And this becomes a real issue when you start trying to set TACs and estimate absolute biomass. After reviewing the information, the SSAP agreed that some expansion of surveys in more shallow waters of the Mid-Atlantic, extending the NIMP survey into the inshore strata was warranted, and that some other areas should be looked at in terms of some type of adaptive sampling strategy, as was outlined in Amendment 10. So that's as far as we got, and I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Any council questions for Andy? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Andy, was there any discussion as to how the advisory panel is going to, how should I put this? We have the trawl survey, we have the video survey, we have the HABCAM, and pros and cons regarding the use of each particular way of surveying the scallop resource, Mid-Atlantic, New England. And I continue to struggle with what's the best survey, where should the money be spent to provide the greatest bang for the buck. And I read the summary of the meeting, and I'm still left with the opinion that there's a great difference of opinion as to what survey should be used. What Was there any conclusion from the advisory panel as to which survey should be pursued aggressively in order to give us the best estimates of abundance?
I don't think the panel's at that point yet. And I'm not sure that there's going to be one answer for all situations. And I think the panel's looking at a combination of technology in a way that's optimized to produce better estimates of abundance and biomass at the least cost. And so it's an issue that the panel's wrestling with. There's no clear answer at this present time. But that's the focus of the discussions, the future discussions.
Okay, thank you. There's one comment in here that was a question actually asked by one of the participants, and I don't see an answer to it. Dr. Stokesbury on page 4 of the summary. Dr. Stokesbury questioned the validity of the dredge calibration, each with a certain amount of error. Is the continuation of the NOAA time series valid? Was there an answer to that question?
Well, I think the answer is we're moving forward with doing just that, and so there are many people on the panel that disagree with Dr. Stokesbury that the calibration will be valid and that it will provide a consistent long-term time series.
Any other counsel? Dave.
Yeah, just briefly to that point, I think one of the comments, too, that I took home was it's not nearly as difficult to perform the calibrations for scallops in a scallop dredge as it is to do the same for fish in a trawl survey. So even though we don't have as much information as we'd ideally like with scallops, we've got I had the sense that there was confidence on the AP that it was the right thing to do to move forward and that we'd be in good shape for the next few years in terms of continuing a time series that we really need.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience have a question for Andy? Harriet.
My question is that we're a commercial fishing industry here at scalloping, and the albatross and all these other things have been going on for many, many years. And I'm one of the people that sat at many meetings since 1985 on per toe, Andy. You always were talking. We had so much per toe. When we talk about what you were catching on, they caught on the survey on the albatross.
It's both weight and number per toe.
Kilograms. Thank you. That was what I was looking for. Kilograms per toe. And it went on and on until 1994. We got the limited access program. We go on. We get larger rings, 3 1/4, 3 1/2. And I believe it was in 1997 in New Hampshire. The fleet was starving. We're literally starving. I own a boat myself, and I was a principal person at Ship Chandlery looking at everybody's numbers, not only my own. People couldn't pay their bills. We wrote off hundreds of thousands of dollars after the count system, which was supposed to be the answer to everything, which we took from Canada, but, of course, we only took part of it. So I begged almost, Andy made a presentation, if we couldn't open some of these closed areas so people could try to make some money. It was starving. No, the scientists didn't feel it was at that point from the research they were doing. Ellen and I also went down to Woods Hole, and we had a meeting with Paul Rago here. He met with us for about 3 hours. We were asking questions if maybe something with the science couldn't be right. She could see. Her husband fishes. She does the paperwork. Scalloping now, they pay you by the count. That was something new after the count. Before, scallops were scallops, but now they became a count. So you know what you're catching. It's on your sales slip, purchase slip. No. So then I guess it was in 1998 we finally got it through with the lobbying of survival and congressmen and senators up and down the coast, that we could get the boats to go out there and do the preliminary survey. because when I asked in 1997 if we couldn't, the Coast Guard had also give a report. They had said that they knew there were boats trying to get in the closed area, both Canadian and American, that up in Area 2 on the Canadian line. So I went to the microphone and I said, I can hear the Coast Guard said boats are trying to get in those areas. That tells me two things. Number one, they're very desperate because they know the consequences. And number two, they know there's scallops there. No, scientists didn't feel it was at that point we could open on anything. Then when they say 1998, we get those three boats which the government chose from people who put their names in. I didn't put my name in. And the government was on those boats. I don't know if Mr. Rago was there. I think Mr. DePaul was, he was involved in that. He was out on one of the boats, I believe. And we saw there was scallops. And we lobbied and lobbied, and we got some of those areas open, and some relief came, and things improved. Now, to start again, to start to do science, we're not in a laboratory. This is an ongoing fishery. People are trying to make a living every day. It's impacting the scallop community, the fishing community, and all the communities as a whole up and down the coast. This isn't like a laboratory test where you're doing something, where you're going to go out and find out. These are real people. So the confidence in the numbers that came before, I know myself and I know many people in the industry, they question. Now you're going to start with another boat. I believe it's something from Delaware. You've got another dredge. You're going to start to match it up to the Albatross. After all the years you've had the Albatross, I would imagine you know what it can and cannot do. Now you start with a new dredge. We all know from fishing, every captain, every boat, everything is different. We got some captains here sitting at the table. You work on these things. This is all a science project, and we're going to build our livelihoods and the community's livelihoods and the states and everything forward on this. The work that SMAS has done has been used, I guess, forward since 99 or 2000 in giving out the allotment of what we're going to catch. And as far as how the money, the industry has volunteered their vessels, which is millions of dollars, and I think it's been done very reasonably what they've done. And they've come up with good numbers. And obviously their population numbers, I know they've been tested. I was down at the university again when Mr. Rago and some of his people was working with the SMAS going forward, checking the size of the scallops and all. They were diving in the tank that day. So these things have gone over and over and over. And I can't understand why we want to start with all new things when everybody says they're so interested in getting good numbers and wanting things to go along well and everything perfect. When now you're going to start with three new things, new dredges, new boats, new calibrations. That's like something breaks in the kitchen. You start to take everything apart at once. You don't leave anything in order. It doesn't make common sense to me, and certainly not when you're outside of a laboratory atmosphere. You're working with real people. And as I say, I listened to that the fleet was in a state of collapse. Now, there's only two choices when we think of that. Either the science was wrong, or the people who were directing what was going to happen had an agenda of cutback for a reason of result. And I have problems here to see that we want to start with everything new and say all these things will be great when we don't know if they'll be great. Why would you not stay with something that has been tested? And if you have enough money to play around and go along with all these things, that's another thing. But all I hear is there's a lack of money. There's an increase here of National Marine Fisheries to use that 2% set-aside that industry has given for better science, to use it on all other kinds of things that I think were supposed to come out of their budget. So that tells me they're low on money, or else it's more convenient to use somebody else's. I, as an industry person, am very against after I've been through over the years what our community and people have been through, people in Maine, people in Massachusetts, all up and down the coast, all those congressmen and senators did not get together behind industry because they, Democrats, Republicans, everybody, because they did not see a need. People were starving. They were going out of business. And that's why there were so many cheap boats, permits, however you want to put it, for sale in 1994, which brings you to the next thing you were discussing here today, the permits. That's why they were sold cheap. After the count, people's boats were run down. They couldn't fix them. They were older. They saw no way to get ahead. They saw what was going on. They took what they could farm, 20,000, 30,000, some went at Marshall sale. A lot of them did. So now, why would you want to start to experiment when something has been going reasonably well instead of building on what you have and trying to perhaps, if you feel you can get it more fine-tuned? When the university did the population study, which I feel is the best population study that has certainly come along in a few decades here. It's so good that everybody wants to own the industry. I cannot understand it, and I wish there was more industry here today to speak. There are a lot of people who are vested in doing all this research. Let's try this drag, let's try that drag. They get money for it. Let's try this, let's try that. If it works out or it doesn't matter to them. They're not vested in fishing. They're vested in research, some of them. And it's a paycheck for them, and I can understand that. But we're talking about the resource and how we're going to catch that resource and how we're going to have the best numbers. And why would you throw away something that has been good over time and start with all other things and take a chance? It's like throwing it in the air and let's see what falls, and we'll pick up a paper and we'll use that. We are ongoing fishing. How can we wait for these things to happen? You've set the allocation 08, 09. Next thing you're going to set 9, 10. It doesn't matter who's going to get that allocation. It should be the right allocation. And the most that you can take, because you're mandated on the high side by Magnuson, to harvest as much as you can for the betterment of the American people. I wouldn't hope we all have to eat Chinese and Japanese scallops and Peruvian scallops. I would hope we could do something for the American people who are selling the ice and running the trucks and everybody else shoveling or whatever they're doing. They're making a living. There's real problems here with what I see. It might be a brief presentation, but this is the underpinning of the whole thing. What is the allocation? Where does the science come from? How good is it? And we've had something that's worked. And now it's to start with new boats, everything new at once. You're talking about people being unfamiliar with boats. They're moving from one to the other. This is a complete unfamiliar. I see a real problem with it, and I think it should be looked into here seriously. I ask all you ladies and gentlemen to really think about it. If what you were doing every day was going to be based on something that was completely unknown, we've had the albatross. If we're going to find out now what the albatross and what can calibrate to it and everything. I mean, you got skippers. They basically know kind of what a dredge will do. But when they take it out on the boat, a new boat, or you're always adjusting the wire, adjusting things. I don't even have a word for it. And I think if it can't, I would hope you could settle it here and see that it's problematic. If not, I guess it has to go further, the politicians, because we're talking about we don't know what's going to happen to communities. I see it a real problem. Thank you.
Dave Gaffel.
Harriet, I wanted to ask you a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
As always, you make some very good points, and I was just curious what your solution would be to the situation. I mean, what would you suggest how they move forward?
I would have, for me, for these times now when you're trying to get your new vessel, whatever you're going to get, I would have continued with the UMass survey if the government wanted to put more people in those boats and observe that survey and go out on the boats, perfectly fine. I would use the UMass survey to get the numbers for the industry. If you have the money to play around with all these other things to see what you think of it. But I think ongoing right now for something that you can rely on, I would stay with a survey that we know has done the job and its numbers have been used every year, I believe since 99 or I guess 2000. And if when they do their survey, I'm sure they have no problem with government people going out there and observing or whatever they want to see. I mean, it's been a collaborative effort right along with the National Marine Fisheries and the university and industry. And if the government's looking to see what boat they think they can do their work on, maybe they should be running a survey simultaneously if they have that kind of money to see what results they're getting on this boat from Delaware, or I forgot the name of the other one there that just came out, the new vessel. What's the Bigelow? Personally, I don't think the Bigelow has ever been built to do any fishing or research work like that. It's probably good for mammal counting and all those things. It's a nice platform. It's probably nice for the people on it, but I don't really think it's ever going to give you any real good numbers. So you're a fisherman. I think we should continue with what we have because too much is at risk. People's livings and livelihood and communities are at risk with these numbers. And I've gone through the periods of time seeing what has happened. I've seen fishing prosper. We had 24 people working at the ship chandlery. Now we have 10. I see the port of New Bedford. I see what's going on, and you're calling that number one. You know what I mean? It's not much to be number one in fishing today in the United States when everybody else is devastated. You're not doing much to say you're number one. It's really not much to brag about. Okay, Boston doesn't even have an ice plant. I say stay with what we have. This is commercial fishery. This is not laboratory science work like that. This is a commercial fishery. That's what we're deciding here, people's livings. You're basically saying if you go with something like this that's unknown, I don't have a word for it. I hope Dr. Pierce or some of the other people at the table can look into it more. But think about it. Would you want your living every day to be up in arms or you go to work, you don't know if you're going to have a job, you don't know what's going to be, well, maybe we're going to sell it. It's crazy. And so what happens on the other hand is you just give out the allocation in the most conservative or less way you can so you figure there'll be no mistakes. Perhaps that, and I don't find that satisfactory, and I don't think Magnuson finds that satisfactory. As I say, are we going to hold our position as a scallop nation selling scallops and all? Okay, thank you.
Dr. Pierce?
I suggest that part of the solution would be to strengthen the partnership between the Northeast Fisheries Science Center and the SMAS Sea Scarlet Program. As it stands right now, it seems that it's more of a competitive situation as opposed to a collaborative work-together situation where, you know, the expertise at both organizations can be brought together to answer these questions that we have regarding scarlet abundance. I think that competition element can be seen in a summary of the meeting, of the Sea Scallop Survey Advisory Panel meeting, especially the last two paragraphs in the document. It's unfortunate that it's evolved to that particular point. It's the video survey versus a trawl survey, and I find that to be a very unsatisfying outcome. So strengthen that partnership so that federal funds can be made available for the video survey, and that way the video survey would not be entirely dependent on earmark funds. If the earmark funds go away, the video survey goes away. If it goes away, then we lose that strong partnership that we have right now with surveys with the Sea Scallop fishing industry. It's a strong partnership. It's an excellent partnership. They bought into it in a major way. And, of course, if we do lose the video survey because of a lack of funds, then we lose the kind of research that's described in our binder. And that is, for example, research done by Kevin Stokesbury and Brad Harris, impact of limited short-term sea scallop fishery on epibenthic community of Georgia's Bank closed areas. Excellent research published in Marine Ecology Progress series that relates to the impact of sea scallop dredges on the ocean bottom and the epifauna. We need that kind of information for our continued discussions on habitat and, of course, phase two of all of our habitat work with the HAPC specifically. So that's it. Let's have a partnership, work together with our not having a situation of it being troll surveys or video surveys. There has to be a better way to do business.
Neil.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just point out that with scallops as anywhere, multiple sources of information, you know, enhance our confidence that the signal is true and that we're on the right course. And so I think it is important to try to move multiple surveys along. Frankly, the SMAS information has been really valuable, as has the scallop dredge survey. And I'll just point out that there are RSA funds available. I don't know that a decision's been made on what projects will be funded, but I know SMAST has proposals in to RSA, so that's a possible funding source. I don't know about earmarks and so forth. I take David's comment that cooperation is good, but it does seem that with limited resources, competition is inevitable. But at any rate, I just wanted to point out the RSA possibility, and I think it was pretty clear that the survey advisory panel felt that multiple sources of information were really enhancing the overall scallop assessment. And the third piece to that was the HABCAM, which maybe is a fuller of potential than ultimately may be the best vehicle in the minds of some, but there are probably some, you know, technological advancements that need to be made, so it may be years off into the future.
Dr. Weinberg.
Just commenting, I think because the Albatross is in the process of going online, going offline, it was just a matter of really whether the Albatross would be used this summer for the scallop survey, and that would be its last, or not, because it's going offline this fall. So a transition to something else was inevitable. And the solution that was made at a very high level was to not use the Albatross this summer. So I think finding the Sharp as another research vessel that could handle a scallop dredge, that was the solution. And doing these calibration studies is kind of the standard approach to trying to switch to another vessel and linking up time series. So that's a scientifically accepted approach. Regarding SMAST, it is certainly partially competition, but also I think there's been a good interaction over the last 10 years. And I think we've learned from each other. At times they've been wrong, and we've corrected them, and I think vice versa. And so you could call it that, a competition, but I think there's also an accumulation of good data coming from both sources. And I think in everyone's mind, we're thinking about transitioning towards a more high-technology approach to doing benthic surveys using cameras and so forth. But we agree that is the direction of the future, but the goal here is to make a smooth transition to that. And part of all this camera work is that you accumulate a tremendous amount of data, but that's not automatically the data that you need in our database to do a stock assessment. So we have to, part of it is, that hasn't been mentioned, is you have to do the groundwork to convert all of that imagery into usable data for stock assessment. That's something that needs additional work. So those are just a few comments about this.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you've been wrong and that they were able to correct you and vice versa. So sounds to me like having both online is, as you say, the future. I think I had Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. Yeah, I think we're down the right path with the multiple approaches, the drop video, the toad video, and we're always going to need a dredge survey. Ultimately, it may be replaced for assessment purposes as far as counting, you know, eyeballs and stuff like that. But in scallops, we're reaching a level now where we're concerned about the health of the meat-weight relationships and predation. I mean, the number one restriction or limitation on production of scallops is predation. And the video camera technology will gain a lot of insight in that direction. And we're also going to be, the scallop survey, ultimately, when the Pisces gets online, is going to be more of a habitat, benthic type of survey. And it's not going to be just counting scallops. It's going to be looking at the other species and the interactions, probably juvenile ground fish, and a lot of other factors will start coming into play. And I look forward to it because all the video results so far have shown that scallop dredging, the way we're doing it in the access areas in a pulse manner, has no habitat impact, adverse habitat impact. So we're very supportive of this. The real problem we have is money, and this is going to be the killer. The fleet is starting to get strained, just like the groundfish fleet, because of the issues of fuel price, where every time there's an issue, whether it's a habitat or a groundfish issue, a turtle issue, the solution has been to cut back scallop production. We should be producing 70 million pounds and earning the value of that. We're down to 45 million pounds. And with proposals on a table, they're going to keep on cutting the scallop production. How did we fund this transition to the new scallop dredge? We funded it with RSA funds. Dr. Bill DePaul, working with the Shadow Survey, I, working with the Scallop Survey Advisory Panel, put in RSA projects. We took RSA funds in those projects, and we bought stuff for the center. We bought them the twine tops, the rings, the dredges to do their surveys. Now, I had a choice this year. Do I submit an RSA proposal to continue to dredge calibration, or do I submit RSA proposals to help the industry with its major problems, which are groundfish bycatch and turtle interactions? So I had to weigh my choices. So I did not submit what probably would have been an easy RSA, you know, continue the calibration work on a dredge. I opted to do the work that I thought was more important for the industry, which is bycatch and turtle interactions, because there's a limited amount of funds available. Somewhere along the line, you know, the SMAS survey is funded with the infrastructure being supported by earmarks and the actual survey itself being supported by an industry that's starting to get up against the wall as far as coming up with the money to support surveys. So this is the fundamental issue that somebody has to address, is where is the money going to come from to continue all this research? And you just can't neglect it because, like Harriet said, the surveys is the cornerstone, the foundation of this entire fishery. Thank you.
Bill?
Bill DePaul, Virginia Institute of Marine Science, also a member of the PDT and a member of the Survey Advisory Panel. Harriet spoke about a new dredge. It really isn't a new dredge. A while back, we realized that one of the possibilities would be that industry could conduct scallop surveys on industry boats. And so the idea would be to see if the information that we got using a survey dredge on a commercial vessel would be compatible or with that information from the NIMS Albatross vessel. So we started using commercial dredge, commercial vessel, and survey dredges. And when the industry saw the survey dredge, it was like, well, you know, we could do some of this and some of that. And so that's when the first idea of the survey advisory panel got started. And so the new dredge that Harriet speaks of is really a consensus dredge. Industry had active participation in looking at how the dredge was put together, possibly some improvements. And also, they're involved in the calibration of that new dredge. So it's not really a new dredge. I think it's a better dredge. And industry's involved in that process. And I would like to also say that dredge surveys have a real value. They all have value. And I think it's pointed out that we need probably several different approaches for a scallop survey. But one of the things we found when we were doing a dredge survey in closed areas, it's very important not only to count the scallops, but to learn about the yield of the scallops. And that's one of the things that the dredge surveys can give you, is a very, very accurate estimation of the weight or the poundage of scallops in a closed area. And that is directly related to the tack that is assigned that closed area. So I just wanted to make a couple points clear. One is that it's not really a new dredge. It's a consensus dredge with input from industry. And two, that I think that all survey technologies have an appropriate place in this process, because we're looking at a fishery that is probably the most valuable fishery on the East Coast, and it's healthy, and we need to keep it that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Vito J.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vito J. Calamo. I am the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fishery Recovery Commission, and better known as the Roy Orbison of the I can't even say of the karaoke circuit, and one of the three tenors from Cape Ann. But on a serious note, well, I can be. Yeah, I've been known to overcrowd the other two. On a very serious note, Mr. Chairman, and I make comment because I was impressed yesterday by the comments by this council on other issues. Very impressed, in fact. And I hope the news media writes that I was impressed with the council, because there have been times that it looked awful bleak on the comments that I heard, but very impressed again. Today, I'm impressed once more on Harriet's comments. I think she summed it up better than I can do. But I also, again, am impressed by the counselors sitting here today, by Dr. Pierce, and listening to Dr. Jim Weinberg. I think they all added to the conversation that was at hand. Mr. Chairman, I've been a member of the Scallop Advisory Committee that's in New Bedford, SMAST, since around 2000, I believe, and been going to meetings, and I've been very impressed, again using that word, with what they do down there. You have, Mr. Chairman, the best scallop captains and fishermen in the world out of New Bedford. It was New Bedford who's led the rest of the world into scalloping. And to have them platforms available with the leadership by Dr. Kevin Stokesbury in SMAST, and Dr. Brian Rothschild, is a plus for either the National Marine Fisheries Service, Woods Hole, or any other institute that helps to derive what's in the ocean to be there. I think the joint collaboration that we've been hunting for years is there. It's in front of you. I've known that they've extended outward to do anything possible to have their research brought forward. And like Dr. Weinberg said, I'm going to call you Jim because I kind of like you anyhow. What Jim said is that, you know, we've made mistakes, they've made mistakes, and worked together. That's true. I think that's true. And I just also believe by putting people other scientists aboard these platforms that have the best captains because they don't fish for time, they fish for money. And that's what they fish for. So they know the best places, how to fish, the best gear to use, what will catch the best fish. Working with them is a golden opportunity that we've all strived for, and sometimes we lose track of what we're really trying to do. To have a area such as New Bedford, Massachusetts, where the grocery people donate groceries, where the fuel companies donate fuel, where Harriet donates her vessel, where other captains donate their vessel, where the crews are paid minimum, where it's a tremendous opportunity for us to go further along in an industry that has been brought from the lowest ebb of all times to the highest ebb. I think that we should not lose this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, and I appeal to the council, as I appealed to you yesterday, to use that good common sense in striving to make this industry continue on. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consultant. You've heard some pretty compelling arguments made as far as the SMAS research. And as Ron Smallowitz said, I have no problem with continuing on and furthering some of the science that's needed to, find a way to sustainably harvest perhaps the richest resource that we have on the East Coast. That being said, I also find it kind of compelling that the council, by virtue of the Magnuson Act, is compelled to use the best science available or to utilize it. And right now, the best science that is available is the SMAS camera survey. There's nothing to compete with it. There are other issues. There are other bits of science that can come in, such as the dredge survey. But that's an entirely different purpose, basically, when you find out what its true value is. It is to determine meat weight and yield and what you're capable of taking. The SMAS survey was able to prove what resource we had on the bottom. It showed it to us. I mean, people used to claim that a picture was worth 1,000 words. Then what's a video worth? What's digital photos worth? I mean, the value of this, what's come forward from this particular research, I think right now is insurmountable. There may be new camera surveys going on that at some point in time may be able to compete, but right now your best science available that you're supposed to utilize is in front of you. The problem we're having now is, and it's been explained very well, but, sometimes it needs to be repeated, is that the industry has basically funded this probably, I don't want to make a claim, but pretty much by themselves. They've donated their time, they've donated their money, they've donated their resource, and don't forget, you've got guys going out to sea for very little compared to what they normally make. They're not making a minimum wage, so they're actually dedicated to getting this done. When you can find fishermen that'll come down, step aboard a boat, and go out to sea because they believe in something, that speaks, how well they think of this particular survey. And they go down and they meet with SMAS on a regular basis, and they make sure that everything comes together and it's pretty much agreed upon. Where else is your science agreed upon before you even undertake it? When we first started seeking access into the closed areas, and I was a member on the council myself and a member of the scallop committee, at one point it seemed like it was almost a fairy tale. We weren't going to get it done. We weren't going to get into closed areas. But then the evidence that was put before you between the video science and the dredge science that came out of it, when they actually went into the closed areas and showed what the resource was there, we were able to find a way to gain access into these closed areas and get some of the benefits of what we had been working so hard for. I mean, we were working to try and stay alive while we had resource that was bountiful, and we couldn't access it. I mean, that's like a starving man pressing his nose up against a glass window watching somebody watching somebody eat inside one of the restaurants, you know, and kind of pushing the food aside because there's too much. We were starving, like Harriet told you. But, you know, that was where some of the uniqueness of what SMAS had to offer came forward. They came forward at a time when we had no money. Who else has done that? Plenty have come forward now because some of the money's there. Think back to the day when we finally got this science off the ground and everyone was speaking about wondrous terms of cooperative research. Cooperative research this, cooperative research that, how we were going to work with them. Fishermen coming forward saying, yes, we got to get this done, until they found out they weren't going to cooperate much. They were going to be able to be there maybe as part of it, but they weren't going to lead it. They weren't going to make too many suggestions as how it should be done because, hell, they're not scientists. So what do they know? We do have our fields of expertise. We have brought forward one good piece of science. At one time, it was claimed that it wasn't peer-reviewed. Well, now it's been in 8 publications. It is peer-reviewed. I say it's your best empirical science that you must adopt. You must also support it. Adopting it is one thing, but you got to feed it at some point. So along with the other industry members, I'm just saying that bring the other science forward, but don't put it ahead of your best available. Thank you.
Deirdre.
Don't want to make this longer, but I just wanted to speak to how the PDT is using all of these different sources of data so that the council has a clear understanding of that. We are definitely using all the different sources of data we have, all the different surveys available, including the SMAS survey, in all the estimates we've been doing, and even more so in the more recent years. And we do have every intention of continuing that. There's no idea of going backwards in that direction. We have an SMAS person on our PDT now to hopefully even fully facilitate that integration of the data even more. So I just wanted people to understand that there's no idea at the PDT level that we're using only some sources of the survey data. We're using everything we have at our fingertips.
Andy.
Yeah, I don't think the implication was that only the survey dredge information should be used in assessments and biomass estimates. In fact, the opposite is the case, that multiple sources of information are useful and reduce variance. The SMAS survey was used in the latest assessment, but I think the consensus of the SSAP was that there was some considerable value in continuing the long-term, broad-based survey, which has some advantages in terms of bringing live material to the surface for examination, which the draft camera survey doesn't have. And they should be used in combination. But at the same time, we should probably we need to be sure that the calibration is appropriate and uses all sources of information. So it might be worthwhile to think about some type of peer review once the calibration studies are done, and maybe that's something that the NRCC could take up.
Jimmy Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recognize that Dennis is normally the one on top of sea scallops, and he's got more expertise in this, but Dennis is a little too nice sometimes once in a while. I've got some issues, and I don't know who I should direct these questions to. Probably Dave and maybe some of the industry or advisory panel members that are here. But why was the research vessel SHARP selected over an industry vessel for the interim vessel of choice for the calibrations? It appears to me that this was an opportunity for the industry to provide a vessel. If it took a 5 or 10 year contract, I would believe that would have been possible at this day and time. Is there a long term contract for the SHARP? One question. Secondly, why was the decision made to use that vessel as opposed to industry? That's first two questions.
I'm going to ask Jim to help me, but I'm going to have Jim help me.
Yeah, I don't know exactly why the SHARP was chosen. it's part of the UNOLS fleet, which is the national fleet of research vessels that are available for doing science. And based on the East Coast, and it's, these ships are used, they have schedules, and it probably was available at that time. But I don't, I really, the decision to use that vessel and all was made above me, and I don't know. And I think that in terms of why it was used instead of an industry vessel, I also don't know the answer to that. But it seems that in the scallop industry, much like the clam industry, there's a lot of calibration work going on looking at clam dredges and scallop dredges on different vessels and getting an overall sense of their capture efficiency. So I think that it's reasonable to use any vessel and not necessarily a commercial boat to do a survey as long as the calibration is done properly. So that's all I know, Jim.
Well, do you know if it's a long-term contract or not, Jim? That's one of the critical questions. I do have some more comments, Mr. Chairman. Do you know if it's a long-term contract with the Sharp?
I'm not sure, but I don't think it's a long-term contract.
That's what I expected to be the answer, and that's where my concern lies. I am reasonably sure right now that the industry could provide a guaranteed platform, even though it may change ownership, but the same vessel. There's enough new vessels available in the industry to sign up for a contract of 10 years, and I think they'd be willing to do that in order for this survey to be done with the confidence that they want to see it done with. You just said a few of the things you said are exactly 100% correct. Calibrations are, in fact, critical, and they are also easier to do on something that don't jump up and swim around too far. You know, so it's, the scallop calibration would be easier. I know Dr. DePaul's work primarily has been with industry boats, and a lot of that was donated time by the industry. What I'm looking at here, recognizing I can see two transitions taking place. Harriet's right, and everyone else that suggested that. Why not do this one time? And I do believe it needs to be a combination of the video work and whatever technology is available 2 years or 5 years down the road. But a lot of us recognize without that video contribution or the work of Stokesbury and UMass and everyone else, we may not be taking the amount of scallops that we've been taking over the last 10 years. I don't think there's any argument there. But you do need both, and Dr. Pierce is right. We need to eliminate this competitiveness, but I don't know that you ever will. However, if the trawl survey, if the dredge survey was done with a contract with the industry boats, and the Science Center certainly has to be involved, but the Science Center is not going to have a boat that can pull a dredge. The Bigelow can't pull a dredge, and the Pisces won't be able to pull a dredge. So the option for using an industry platform here, I think, is a real good potential. But being involved with surveys, I recognize there's issues related to funding. This is one time that a research set-aside issue, you need to look at it differently. You need to look at it entirely differently. Research set-asides are usually taken off of the TAC. Why not increase the TAC for whatever percentage of money needs to be generated? If we're taking a precautionary approach to what we're harvesting, minimize that precautionary approach. Take another 5 or 8,000 pounds or bushels or tons or whatever the hell you want to. Designate it to RSA up front for this project. Then it's going to be the industry funding it because it's right off the top. But they will have the confidence of having their vessels involved with this, and I believe you could get a long-term contract because these levels of precautionary approach kind of diminish National Standard 1's ending language, which means it says prevent overfishing at the same time, achieving on a continuing basis optimum yield from each fishery in the United States fishing industry. And I think there's wiggle room here with the resources in good a shape as this to look at the research set aside differently to help fund a long-term survey that would not involve contracting and a boat that has, to my knowledge, I don't know the boat. That's part of the problem I've got. I recognize it's a university boat, but other things become more important as priorities change. There's a priority with the scallop industry, too. That's the scallop industry and the resource. I would think you'd have more stability if it was considered. So, again, Mr. Chairman, I recognize this is Dennis's issues, but I really think this deserves some discussion. I can see a two-step process here when you could do it one time and and maybe do it better. Thank you.
Well, we're already 20 minutes over on this issue, and I think a lot of concerns have been raised today, and I'm it's good to hear that there's agreement out of Jim and others that we're going to need to maintain both sets of information moving forward. From my perspective, these types of discussions are best had at the SCOLOP Survey Advisory Panel, quite frankly. I'm starting to hear a lot of repetition in the comments, which means one of two things. Either a minority of people don't like the result out of the SSAP, or the SSAP didn't fully address these issues. One or the other. Andy, is there a scheduled meeting for the SSAP right now? Sounds like the decision to use the SHARP was made above anyone in this room, unless the person that made the decision is in the room and wants to stand up and say they made the decision. And I'm not sure that's anything this council can weigh in on. Well, I think that's it for this agenda item right now. We're going to move into Habitat. Dave Preble. Sally McGee.